barrel length, advantages of controlled round feed, my home defense setup, and Miller MOA for PRS this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and our first question from this Monday comes from Patreon, and Ryan on Patreon asks, what are your thoughts on using barrel length to buy range versus using a different caliber to buy range? For example, I want to build a 6.5 Grendel as a 1,000-yard AR platform. Even at sea level, 0 DA with a 16-inch with a 123 gets you out to about 1,100 rounds, whereas a 20-inch gets you to 1,150. A 5,000 DA of 16 gets you to 1,300 and a 20-inch to 1,350, so 50 yards for 4 inches. It seems like for the caliber, the longer barrel doesn't do much because you're already starting off strong. Thoughts on the trade-off between length and maneuverability versus extra range past 1,100 even? I probably would not be using a 6.5 Creedmoor. Thanks a bunch for the show. Ryan, there is a balancing act between barrel length and downrange performance. Now, your example was very specific, and when we're talking about the 6.5 Grendel, we're talking generally about AR platforms, and for me, that limit of diminishing returns, or that point of diminishing returns for me, comes at about 20 inches. With a regular size AR platform. Once we get beyond 20 inches, it starts to get a little bit more cumbersome to move that rifle around. Now, I say this, but my 6.5 Creedmoor large frame AR, our Mega Arms build, that has a 24-inch 6.5 Creedmoor barrel on it, but that is a larger, heavier rifle overall. And as you mentioned, if you're actually going to go to that length, if you're really going to reach out, 6.5 Grendel is probably not the best option to do so to begin with. So you will want to go with a larger caliber, a short action caliber like the 6.5 Creedmoor, 6 Creed 260, you know, those kind of things. So you do have to kind of balance that. The first thing that you really want to think about is, what am I actually going to do with this rifle? Is it going to be a prone long range rifle? If that's the case, then the barrel length really doesn't make a difference, and you can run that 24 to 26 inch barrel and not have a problem at all. If you're going to use it for competition, where you're going to be moving in and out of barricades, getting in and out of vehicles, doing all kinds of crazy stuff, crawling through culverts, that kind of thing favors a shorter barrel length, but you don't want to cut the legs out of your cartridge. So I wouldn't recommend going to something like a 16-inch 6.5 Grendel, because then you have lost a lot of that barrel length. You're going to lose a good amount of muzzle velocity, because while you may only lose a little bit of muzzle velocity going from, for instance, a 20-inch to an 18-inch, you're going to lose more going from an 18 to a 16 or a 16 to a 10.5. So as you go closer down in, you're going to be blowing more unburnt powder out. You're going to have less room for those expanding gases to accelerate the bullet, and that's going to run you into a lot more loss of muzzle velocity quicker. For my purposes, I usually keep my bolt guns at around that 24-inch barrel length. I find that works best for competition guns. If it is a really long-range gun, like my 300 Win Mag, that has a 26-inch barrel on it, because I am not going to be doing a lot of barricade work with that gun. I'm not going to be crawling through culverts, and I'm not going to be bailing out of cars with that 300 Win Mag. It is mainly a long-range rifle, so I want as much time for those expanding gases to accelerate that bullet as possible. And even if I'm only gaining just a little bit with that extra barrel length, then I'll go with it. I may even consider going with a 30-inch barrel when I rebarrel that rifle, just because there's no big deal for adding that extra barrel length. The only disadvantage is it starts to not fit in rifle cases, and it starts to have trouble fitting in the back of my car. So those are considerations as well. But in your instance, I wouldn't change my plan to get an extra 50 yards of supersonic distance. That to me doesn't, that's not a good enough payoff for the difference in barrel length. If you are going for that 6.5 Grendel, then I would stick in that 18 to 20 inch barrel length and roll with that, because as you mentioned, if you're going to stretch out further than that, you're going to change to a different cartridge. So that's just my view on barrel length and how I go about deciding what barrel length I like. Our next question comes from Facebook, and Nate asks, what are the practical advantages of control round feed actions, and in what applications do you think they shine the most? Example would be Bighorn / Mousingfield versus Defiant / Surgeon actions, disregarding the interchangeable bolt heads and only focusing on the extraction method. I'm just wondering if they're a necessity for anything versus a novelty for everything. I've heard anecdotal evidence that they handle cartridges like the 6-Dasher better than push feed actions. Well, Nate, I haven't heard anything that they handle those cartridges better. The main advantage that you're getting from a control round feed action is as soon as the bolt starts to pick up that cartridge from the magazine, the extractor actually grips that case head and it holds that round as you're feeding it into the magazine. The opposite side of that, a push feed action, such as a Remington 700, as soon as the bolt starts to move that cartridge forward, the cartridge will get to a certain point on the feed lips where it will just pop up out of the magazine, and now it's just laying in the action on top of all the other cartridges. The best way to picture this is on a push feed. If you start to feed that cartridge and then you stopped after it popped up out of the magazine, if you rolled the rifle on its side, the cartridge most likely will fall out of the ejection port onto the ground. Whereas with a control round feed, while you're pushing it forward, after the magazine has fully released the cartridge, if you roll the rifle over, the cartridge will likely not fall out because the bolt is gripping the cartridge head and the chamber is controlling the tip of the cartridge. So there are more points of contact on that cartridge and the rifle has positive control. That's why it's called control round feed, controlling the cartridge into the chamber. Now, for the main reason that these kinds of rifles, the control round feed rifles, like the old pre-64 Winchesters, the reason that they got such a great following is if you are in a situation where you need absolute reliability, that is the most important thing. For instance, dangerous game hunting. You want a control round feed action because there's less likelihood that you're going to get two cartridges that are going to pop out of that magazine. There's less things to go wrong with that when you're feeding the cartridge. Now, we're just talking about feeding the cartridge, not other things like extractor issues or ejector or any of that. It is more likely that you are going to get a clean feeding and you're going to bolt up a fresh round without a problem. This is important if you have a Rhino charging you. When we switch over and we go into accuracy sports, bench rest or PRS or things of that nature, then we're less concerned about that control round feed. We are more concerned with the accuracy of it. And if you look at the bolt face of, for instance, a Remington or a Clone, that bolt face is supporting the head of your cartridge in a more concentric manner than some of the control round feed actions, where they have to leave the bottom of the bolt face open and they have to have the space for the extractor to grip on the side there. Now, without getting into a discussion of engineering, I really don't think in most of our shooting sports it matters. If I was shopping for a dangerous game rifle, I would probably still go with the control round feed. If I am shopping for a competition gun, I'm less concerned with the feed mechanism. I'm more concerned with the accuracy that that action has demonstrated, and I'm more concerned with things like bolt lift and bolt throw. For a purely competition rifle, I really would prefer something that has a 60-degree bolt lift and a short bolt throw so that I can quickly operate the rifle versus if it is a push feed or a control round feed. So that's just kind of the way that I look at things. Now, the Mousingfield is a really nice action. I played with them a little bit. I haven't had a chance to actually get one in and build up a rifle on one, But overall, that action looks to be very well designed. In the same vein, Defiance and Surgeon actions are very, very well made. I've shot rifles that have had both Defiance and Surgeon actions. And Surgeon puts out a really, really high quality product. There are a lot of law enforcement, a lot of tactical rifles that are built on Surgeon actions. So there's really no question that those work well, but they do have some of the same drawbacks, depending on how the configuration is, of the Remington actions. So really, I think either is going to be okay. I think if you are looking for absolute peak accuracy, I think you have a little bit more of an advantage with a push feed type setup with what we're looking at right now. If you are looking for the utmost reliability in feeding, then control round feed has probably still got a little bit of an edge. And that's just my opinion. I'd love to hear your opinion out there. I know there are a lot of fans of the old Winchester designs, a lot of fans of the Remington 700 designs. So really, I want to hear, do you feel that there is a marked advantage with one versus the other? Please leave a comment down below and let us know. Our next question comes off of Facebook from Corey, and Corey asks, your home defense setup rifle, pistol, or shotgun, 5.56 versus 300 blackout, weapon-mounted light or handheld, what say you? I know each has its own merits, but let's say for urban or suburban home. Well, Corey, since we are filming this a day after the Antifa threatened attacks where they were going to attack Trump supporters and gun owners and all kinds of nonsense, I thought that was kind of an interesting question to cover. Home defense, first of all, is going to be based a lot upon how your home is set up and what your needs are. Do you have small children? Do you have infants? What kind of layout your home is, if you're out in the middle of nowhere or if you're in the middle of dense, packed-in suburban setups. I will tell you, for me, we live here in the suburbs. I do have to worry about shoot-through in walls. I have to worry about my neighbors because regardless of what some people may think, we are responsible for every round we fire. So if you do get into a lethal force confrontation where you are justified in using force against a criminal that is attacking you, and in the process of using force against that criminal, you injure an uninvolved party, you're still going to have to answer for that. So you don't want to get in a situation where you prevail, but you still get in trouble because you weren't cognizant of other factors and you weren't careful to make sure that you maintained control over all the rounds that you fire. Now, I will tell you right off the bat, I have heard tons and tons of people say, get a shotgun, get a shotgun, get a shotgun. I have plenty of shotguns. Shotguns are not my front line for home defense. It's not that a shotgun is not a capable weapon, because a shotgun is absolutely a capable weapon. It is because mainly shotguns are very misunderstood. A lot of people will say get a shotgun with birdshot. That is a very, 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 very bad choice. Birdshot does not perform well against human targets. Birdshot does not perform well against intermediate barriers. If you go shoot a hollow core door with a load of birdshot, it looks really ugly. The hole that's left, that's ragged. In movies, it looks really cool. But if you've ever seen a human being shot with birdshot, it is not an immediate stop. And again, our goal is to immediately stop the threat. So shooting somebody with birdshot, you're not going to guarantee a stop. The other thing is, a shotgun, all you have to do is level the barrel at them and shoot. And that's not the case either. You have to aim a shotgun, especially at home defense distances. Home defense distances, your pattern is going to be very, very small. So you're not just going to be able to send a lead cloud at somebody and hit them. No matter if it's a handgun, a rifle, a shotgun, whatever, you have to aim. So those take out the big advantages that everybody says, oh, get a shotgun. Shotguns are harder to operate. If you take someone of smaller stature who is not an avid shotgunner, it's more difficult to put down multiple accurate shots with a shotgun than it is with an AR or a handgun. So again, we come into that, you know, their claimed advantages that it's so easy to pump around into a shotgun and then go, again, are a drawback. Shotguns can and do malfunction. I can tell you, after years and years of law enforcement exposure to the Remington 870, that there are certain malfunctions that are fairly catastrophic for a shotgun, and it's going to take it out of the fight. There are malfunctions that, unless you train regularly on how to clear the malfunctions with the shotgun, it's going to be dead to you. There's nothing you're going to be able to do with it. So a shotgun is not a hey, you're an unskilled individual, get a shotgun and solve the problem. That's why I absolutely hate the Joe Biden quote, get a shotgun. Well, that's not the best idea. And then finally, again, we're in an urban area. For me, the best option for a shotgun is either double-aught buck or some of the new frangible slugs that are on the market. And either one of those are going to penetrate most interior walls and or almost all interior walls and most exterior walls as well, if you end up having an exterior wall as a backstop. Unless you have brick or cinder block or concrete, that wall is generally not going to stop an ounce of lead coming out of a shotgun. So if you jump up to the effective levels, you really mitigate all the claimed advantages of a shotgun. If that's all you have, a shotgun can be a very effective tool, but you need to train with it. So I count the shotguns out because they're difficult. They're low round count. They have other things that I just really don't want to deal with. My primary home defense weapon is a handgun. And right here we have the Danger Close Armament Signature G19. You guys have seen this thing. I have taken it out to the range, shot a couple hundred rounds through it. Made sure it is reliable, made sure it will cycle and run with my defensive ammo. And this is pretty much my constant carry gun right now. It's a 19. It has a 15-round magazine, one in the pipe, so 16 rounds total capacity. I've got a APLC weapon light on here so I can identify my target. I have got iron sights on here, and I have an RMR, so I have the speed of a dot, I have the reliability of the iron sights, and I have a weapon light to identify my target. And overall, this will handle most problems. Now, I have children. I have one teenager. I have one 9-year-old in my house. They will both be able to move rapidly should I need to wake them up in the middle of the night and get them to a safe area. But if you have younger children, if you have infants, then you need to think about this. You need to think about the ability to have your weapon in one hand and then be able to collect your kids in the other, move through doors, manipulate things. So a pistol is really my primary suggestion for a home defense weapon. I know it's not as sexy as some of the other stuff out there, but a handgun is utilitarian. It allows you to function. It is much easier to get in and around things if you're not used to CQB with a long gun. And again, it will allow you to grab your pets, grab your dogs, open doors, grab kids, that kind of thing. It's very easy to keep a pistol and a spare magazine close at hand. We did a review recently on the Vault-Tec VTI Pro gun safe. That actually sits on my bedside table now with this handgun and a spare magazine in it. And that is my primary line of defense. So if there's a bump in the middle of the night, I've got a magazine and the handgun. They are in appendix holsters with a clip on it. So even in PJ bottoms, I have PJ bottoms with a drawstring waist. It's not ideal, but in a pinch, I can jam this holster in the waistband of my PJ bottoms and it'll clip on, and there you go. I've got a handgun holster and a spare magazine to be able to go deal with something. And this may not be somebody kicking in your door and coming in. It may be screams and shouts and somebody pounding on the door outside in the middle of the night. Because of my occupation, those are things that I have to investigate. I can't just pick up the phone and hope for the best. So I like to have something that I can grab and I can go. Occasionally my dogs will go nuts barking downstairs in the middle of the night. Well, again, I want to have something to deal with it. It may not be something where I'm going to go handgun out clearing corners, but I want to have my gun with me. So this is my best suggestion for home defense. If you can't go full on out with a dot sight equipped, weapon light equipped handgun, then a regular handgun, Glock 19, regular old sights, and a handheld light is the way to go. That will get you 90% of what this gun will do. The only problem there is now you get a light in one hand and you're going to have to manipulate that light when you go to open doors and move through. So that is my suggestion there. Now, if you want the top of the line in home defense and you're not worried about having something that doubles up as something you can carry outside of your home, then I really think it's hard to do better than an AR. The rifle in front of me, this is a RDMR-7 from RSS Defense. We did a review on this rifle, actually its sister rifle, not too long ago. And this is a bit of a top-of-the-line rifle. It's fairly expensive. You don't have to go to this level. But a 14.5 or 16-inch barreled AR shooting a lighter weight cartridge like a 55-grain varmint round or some of the better 55-grain defensive ammo out there is a relatively good home defense gun. Now, you do have a larger package that you now have to maneuver around in a home, and it takes a little bit of skill. But the nice thing about this is it is a lightweight package, so you can still hold it in one arm should you need to scoop up the kids and go. We have a dot sight on here, so it is really quick target acquisition. I have an Enforce WML on here, so we've got the light. We can light things up. If I need to, then we can click it on, constant on. So again, you have that one hand operation. And overall, it's just a really good package. You can tuck it under your arm if you need to shoot up close. And again, if you maybe don't have the arm strength to be able to just hold it up to your shoulder, one-armed. So there are a lot of benefits to this. Now, the ballistic advantage here is you have a rifle. If I'm going to a gunfight, I want a rifle. Actually, if I'm going to a gunfight, I want artillery and air support, but if I can't get artillery and air support, then I want a rifle and friends with rifles. So advantage there, you are more accurate with a rifle because you have more points of contact on the body and it's easier to index a rifle under stress. You have the terminal ballistics advantage of a rifle. Rifles are more lethal than handguns. If you just are going to compare rifle versus handgun and not get into the minutia of it, rifles are more lethal. So we have to keep that in mind. Ballistically, there are some really interesting things when we start talking about rifles, because when we start shooting through walls and intermediate barriers, if we are utilizing lighter loads that are traveling at a higher velocity, then they will disintegrate quicker with the rifle. So you may actually find that you have less shoot through in interior walls with a rifle than you would with the handgun. Exterior walls, if you have any kind of heavy construction against brick, siding, that kind of stuff, and you are shooting 55 grain lightweight bullets, then you're going to really have some significant fragmentation when the bullet hits that stuff, and you may not have as much of a shoot through concern. Drawbacks, of course, are the same thing. Now that you have less of a shoot-through concern, you have less power to be able to get through intermediate barriers. If you have somebody hiding behind a door jamb or behind a door, these don't shoot through as well if you're running lighter weight ammunition. If you step up to heavier weight ammunition, you increase your shoot-through risk, and you have to be concerned about what is on the opposite side of interior and exterior doors, or interior and exterior walls. So overall, if you want to take the time to learn how to manipulate a long gun and clear corners and move through a house, and you don't need something outside of your home, then the AR, I think, is the way to go. You can teach most people how to operate an AR very quickly. It has very light recoil. It has very high capacity. So I'm running a 20 round magazine in it right now. And this is exactly the way this rifle sits, ready to go in my home. I've got a Holosun sight on here, and the scope cap is just dangling around here. This Holosun comes on automatically when you pick the rifle up. So the sight is turned on at an intermediate level. I can just grab it and go. It's easy to teach, easy for even younger shooters to shoot. I could hand this to my 9-year-old and he could actually shoot it effectively. So overall, I think this is a great option. Again, you don't have to go with a high dollar expensive AR, but you do have to go with a reliable AR. You want to make sure you take it out and shoot quite a few hundred rounds through it and make sure it's functioning reliably before you say, okay, this is my home defense rifle. So that is just some of my views on home defense. That probably took a little bit longer than I was expecting, but there is so much more on home defense and firearm selection. And firearm selection is really a very personal topic. The type of handgun, we could spend hours talking on the benefits and drawbacks of different types of handguns for personal protection and home defense, but I'm not going to stretch this episode out that long. Our next question comes from Rock, and Rock asks, since I'm on my last box of 1,000 GM210 primers and there's no supply in sight, what's your favorite alternative to gold medal match for large rifle primers? It's a little early, but happy Marine Corps birthday, my former ghillie-wearing buddy, Semper Fi. Well, Semper Fi, brother, I am in the same boat as you are as far as the federal large rifle match primers. I haven't been able to find them anywhere. I am pretty much almost out of my stash. I think I have a couple hundred left. So I am switching over to CCI BR2s for my use. They're a little bit more expensive, but they seem to be a whole lot more plentiful, and the cost is really minimized when you spread it out over 1,000 primers. So CCI BR2s I found to be relatively reliable, relatively accurate, and I haven't seen a ton of change in my loads that I have done with the GM 210s and the BR2s. So I think that's a viable alternative. Of course, now that I've said that, all you guys are going to run out and buy BR2s, and I'm not going to be able to find BR2s anymore. But that is a really good option. I haven't really looked into a lot of the other primers that are out there, but the BR2s have just worked for me in the past, so I went ahead and grabbed those. Our next question comes from GoFast, and he says, rifle can't confuses me. With rifle and scope leveled, the Stadia look off a few degrees to me. Should I rotate the scope to line up with what I perceive or shoot it true level even though the reticle looks off? Well, that's a really good question, and it depends on how you are leveling out the rifle. If you have a level on the rifle, and what you're telling me is you're setting the level on the rifle level and the reticle looks off in the scope, you could have a problem there, because while you're holding the reticle level and the rifle and the bore, or I'm sorry, the bore and the scope may be on a plumb line when the rifle is level. If that turret housing is cocked off to one side, then when you start to dial elevation, you're not just dialing elevation, you're dialing elevation and windage, because you're going up this way instead of straight up. And that will throw your shots off, especially the more you dial. So the longer range that you're trying to dial that zero in or that dope in, you are adding more windage as you go out. Now, if we go the opposite direction and the not just the reticle, but the actual turret housing and the scope is trued up and the rifle is canted to one side, you're not getting a ton of offset on that bore underneath the rifle, and most of that is going to be factored out when you zero the rifle. So as you go out, it may have a very, very tiny effect on it depending upon what your bore height is, but it's going to have much less of an effect than having that turret canted. So what I really recommend you do is when you set things up, get the rifle leveled out and go down range. About 100 yards is usually what I'll do. Is I'll take a carpenter's level and I'll draw a plumb line on a piece of cardboard. And then when I level the rifle out, I will turn the scope until the reticle is plumb on that plumb line, and then tighten everything down, get your scope set in, go ahead and zero your scope, and then proceed to shoot a tall target test. So you will have an aiming point down at the bottom, the very bottom of your target, and shoot around into that target, and then dial up 2 mils. Holding on that same aim point at the bottom of the target at 100 yards, fire the next shot, and that next shot should be about 7.2 inches higher than your target. But we don't really care about the distance at this point. This isn't necessarily a true tracking drill. What we're checking for is vertical tracking. So dial another 2 mils, fire another shot, dial another 2 mils, fire another shot, and continue until you get to the top of that target. What you should see is you're holding your reticle on that little dot at the bottom of your line. You should see your shots track straight up the line. You know, because of wind or because of your target moving or because improper body positions, you may get one shot off to one side, one shot off to the other side, but you pretty much want to see it follow that line. If you see it following but curving out, that is track out. That is a problem if your scope is plumb and your rifle is plumb and you're making sure that everything is level for each and every shot. That means there's an issue with the tracking of your scope, and it's something you'll need to address with the scope manufacturer. It might be that you can turn the scope in the rings and eliminate that track out, but at that point, I would put that scope as a no-go, contact the manufacturer, and get it fixed. There are some manufacturers that will tell you there's a certain amount that that reticle can be canted in the scope, and it's still within their specs. I would find a different scope at that point. But that's the way you you even that out. It's more important that the turret housing is level and that the when you dial in elevation, you are dialing in elevation only in that vertical plane, not in the horizontal as well. So that's how to set that up. That's how to track it. And that's how to check it. And some solutions if you find an issue with that. And our last question comes from Richard, and Richard asks, "Milscopes dominate PRS matches. Why and would a shooter be handicapped using an MOA scope? Appreciate the hard work getting us the info." Well, Richard, that's a great question, and the answer is shooting an MOA scope is no handicap whatsoever. The handicap would be if you are shooting a mixed scope, meaning a mil reticle and MOA turrets. That is the way our old school scopes are. There's still a lot of scopes out there that have mil reticles and MOA turrets. Some of my scopes here, I've got a couple of them that are still old school scopes that have that. So that is not a good thing because you reduce the ability to just spot your impacts, measure, and fix it with your dial. If you are shooting an MOA scope, that's perfectly fine. There's no handicap there whatsoever because your turrets and your reticle will match. You'll still be able to measure with the reticle and offset with the turrets, and you'll be good to go. So I don't think there's any drawback or any handicap at all if you are shooting a minute angle reticle and minute angle turrets versus a milradian reticle and milradian turrets. So shoot what you want to shoot. The only drawback that you can sometimes run into is if you end up with someone spotting for you and they are spotting in mils and you are shooting an MOA, then you're going to have to do conversions on the fly. But if you're switching back and forth between them, there's no conversion. Your dope chart is going to be an MOA. If you're shooting an MOA rig, your dope chart is going to be in mils. If you're shooting a mil rig, so there's no math, there's no conversion to be done. My preference is for mils because I started with mil reticles, and I think mils just works better in my head. But MOA can work equally well if that is what you are set up with and that is what your info is. So I hope that answers your question. Don't be afraid to get a mil reticle and mil turret scope. Don't be afraid to get an MOA turret and MOA reticle scope. Just don't mix the two in the same scope. That's old school. We really don't need to do that anymore because we have plenty of options available to us. Well, that's all we have for this Mail Call Mondays. I want to thank you guys again for joining us. If you like the show, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. If you have any questions or comments over anything we've covered, please leave them in the comment section down below or send them to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you're listening to us on your favorite podcast app, you can send questions to us at 8541tactical@gmail.com. Thank you guys very much for supporting what we do, and I want to really thank my Patreon supporters. You guys are really coming through for us. So please, if you want to find more about Patreon, check it out in the comment section down below or in the description section, and see what we're doing over on Patreon. And until next time, get out and shoot!